www.ministrieslive.org. Gets you to the home page. You get into ministries, and then you can get to the Sunday school classes online if you want them. In our study in the book of Daniel, we've been focusing upon the Daniel's 70th week, which is defined for us in chapter 9, and then 10 and 11 and 12 kind of add some more information to it. And what we know about Daniel's 70th week is that it's 7 years long. It begins with a treaty that is signed between some kind of a 10-nation alliance that is formed by those countries up there, some subset of them. Okay? That's what marks the beginning of the tribulation period. And the tribulation period is after the rapture. So if we see events that we know take place in the tribulation period, they take place after we're gone. So if we see things heading in that direction or possibly heading in that direction, we're out of here real, real soon like. So the very first thing that marks the start of that time period that is after the rapture is some subset of those countries you see there inside the red boundary forming an alliance. 10 of them will form an alliance. Remember the 10 toes in Daniel chapter 2? The 10 horns in Daniel chapter 7 and 8? Remember that? That's these nations forming an alliance. The number 10 is how many of these guys will get together and form an alliance. And the head of that alliance is our old bud, the Antichrist, who was previewed to us by Antiochus Epiphanes, that Syrian king, in about 175 B.C., 175 down about 168 he reigned. So the formation of this alliance is the beginning of the tribulation period. Now, Israel has been through a number of these proxy wars that they got going on over there right now. And the way they go, there's kind of a rhythm to them. You know, they fight it out for 2 or 3 months and things settle out and kind of everything goes back to normal. Nothing happens until the bad guys get a chance to reload their missiles and then they dump on them again at another time. That kind of goes on and on. And Israel usually can handle that. But it may be that this thing will evolve into something that they can't handle. If Iran gets involved directly with Israel, which is always a possibility, they may actually provide a driver for this alliance that we know is going to form. Let me suggest one, a driver. It's a real cold winter in Europe. And Iran has cut off oil flow to the west because of their fight with Israel. And the Europeans can't heat their houses. They can't get heating oil. You think they might want to get together and try to solve that problem? I think the main driver for this alliance is going to be oil, not a military solution per se. It will result in a military solution because somebody's got to stop the fighting between Israel and their proxies over there and Iran if it's going to settle down. So this alliance will sign that treaty with Israel. Remember, that's the thing that starts this thing. So if you see movement toward more and more of a direct conflict between Israel and Iran, that's good. That means we're getting closer to being out of here. Because that means a common driver for all of these countries is in place. Oil is the driver. Iran is not going to attack Europe militarily. That ain't going to be a problem for them. NATO could wipe Iran off the face of the earth overnight. There ain't nothing there militarily, I don't think. But if Iran stops shipping oil to the West, You know, Russia ain't going to help them. The Arabs ain't going to help them much, probably. And so it gets cold in Europe in the winter. And if they can't get heating oil, they may say, hey, let's get together and see if we can't somehow or another put an end to this fight, this mess, and get the oil flowing again. Let's form an alliance. Let's go survey all of our countries and see who's willing to join with us to form an alliance that we can maybe go to Israel and say, look, we'll protect you from Iran. And go to Iran and say, look, we'll buy all the oil you can send us, blah, blah, blah. They can work out something where the 10-nation alliance now becomes a player. You with me on this idea? May not be the right idea, but sounds like a possibility to me. So, something has to happen that is common to all of these countries. And the only thing I can think of is oil flow. I ain't worried about military. I don't think that matters. So, watch how this proxy war that they've got started over there now evolves. If Iran gets involved a little more, and Israel starts to fear maybe some kind of a nuclear reprisal from Iran. Right now they don't think Iran has a bomb, but they think they could probably got enough materials they can put one together in a few months, something like that. So if things start going like that, Israel and Iran, and some problem arises that's common to those guys right there, that alliance is probably pretty close to forming. And we're out of here before it forms. So if you see any of this, you got to believe the rapture is very, very, very close. Maybe we won't see it. Maybe we're raptured out of here before the alliance forms, and that's okay. But if you see anything driving that European collection of old Roman Empire countries, something common to them, keep your bag packed. We're about out of here. All right, you with me? Now,
it's weird that Russia isn't involved in any way.
Well, not apparently with the signing of the treaty, but they're stinkers all the time anyway. They're going to be mucking around and doing something to hurt the world. Until the Lord destroys them, which he will. Remember Ezekiel 39, he not only destroys the Russian army, he destroys the Russian people. So they will get theirs during the middle of the tribulation period. What they do before then, they'll be mucking around and doing something, I'm sure. Of course, you won't see any of this because we'll be out of here before it happens at the rapture. Now, we got the big brush overview framework of the tribulation period in Daniel chapter 9. Remember, it's 7 years long, begins with this treaty we've been talking about. It ends with the Savior coming back and crushing all of his enemies. The midpoint of that, the Antichrist sets himself up in the temple in Jerusalem to be worshipped. We know the big point of the thing from Daniel. We've added an adjunct to our Daniel study, which is the book of Revelation. Because in it, chapters 6 through 19, we get the detail of what's going to happen during that 7-year period of time. We don't get the detail in Daniel. We get the broad brush start, middle, and end point events. But in Revelation 6 through 19, we get the detail. The detail of that time frame is just almost unbelievable. You've got to really have a good confidence in the Word of God to accept what's stated. It is so extreme. Now, last week we saw in chapter 6 just the beginning of it, and it begins with a bunch of wars. Let me remind you what the Lord said about this time frame, so that as you see these things, you can rest assured, because He said it was going to happen. Remember back in Matthew chapter 24 and 25, His disciples asked Him, He said, Lord, when are you coming back? And what will be the signs associated with your coming back? Well, He didn't answer the first part. Tell us, when will these things be? He didn't do that. He didn't tell them when. He gave them no dates, no numbers. Second question was, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So what are things we can look for, Lord, to know that you're about ready to come back? Tell us the timing and tell us the events. And he didn't tell them the timing. He ain't going to give them any timing. But he did start to tell them about the events. Here's what he said. Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. A lot of people will claim to be the Messiah during the tribulation period. You won't care, you're gone. And you will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. There will be a bunch of wars start to take place during that seven-year interval. But don't be frightened, for those things must take place, but that's not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. A lot of fighting going on between countries during the tribulation period. Some of these knucklehead morons that are running countries like North Korea, they're going to be launching that stuff they got over there. And so will a bunch of other people. Kingdom against kingdom, nation against nation. In various places there will be famines and earthquakes. Well, the famine is inevitably the result of war. The food chain is going to get disrupted. People can't eat. That's coming. That's inevitable. It says, but these things are only the beginning of birth pangs. Then they will deliver you, he's talking to his Jewish disciples, and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations on account of my name. Israel will have no allies in the tribulation period. They will be hated by all nations. And at that time, many will fall away and will deliver up one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and mislead many. Be a money-making opportunity for some of these lying, cheating prophets around in various roles. And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. It's hard to believe lawlessness will be increased from what we got right now, didn't it? Anyway, it will. But the one who endures to the end shall be saved. And the gospel of the kingdom, that's the one he preached when he was here. John the Baptist did also. Those two guys both preached, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. That gospel will be preached again during Daniel's 70th week. It will be preached in the whole world for a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, who's that, the abomination of desolation? That's the Antichrist that Daniel told us about, foreshadowed by Antiochus Epiphanes. So he tells his disciples, and of course it's his Jewish ancestry or descendancy that will actually do this, when you see that standing in the holy place, that's the Antichrist, when you see him, stand in the holy place, the temple, in parentheses, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Get out of Jerusalem when this guy takes over at the middle of the tribulation period, because he's going to dump on you. He's going to attack you, God's people, Jerusalem, Israel. So get out of there. And let him who is in the field not turn back to get his cloak. Don't waste time going and getting your coat. Just run for it. But woe to those who are with child and those who nurse babes in those days, because they can't travel very quickly or efficiently or whatever. Women with infants and so on, they'll struggle to get out of there. Pray that your flight may not be in winter. That would slow you down. Or on the Sabbath. Israel doesn't normally fly planes on the Sabbath or run trains or do anything to move people. Looks like they may make an exception for this thing going on over there now. But normally you can't get out of Israel on the Sabbath. And the Lord tells them that. Hope it ain't on the Sabbath that he turns on you. For then, that is when the abomination of desolation sets himself up in the temple at the midpoint of the tribulation period, then there shall be a great tribulation, such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. The second half of the tribulation period is way worse than the first half. And the first half, we already know, will kill at least 2 billion people through wars. We'll come back and look at that in just a minute again. It's Revelation chapter 6. But the second half is way worse than the first half. And unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days shall be cut short. If the tribulation period went beyond 7 years, I don't know how long beyond it, but a little beyond it, the death rate would be 100%. Nobody could survive it, even the elect. And a few more things. I'll finish up here in just a minute. False Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Even the elect will be deceived by these false prophets and so on. Behold, I've told you in advance. If therefore they say to you, behold, he is in the wilderness, don't go forth. Or behold, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe them. Nobody is going to sneak me in at the second advent. For just as lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. Universal recognition of him. You can't possibly miss his coming. So whenever the corpse is there, the cultures will gather. Then he gives some more. Yeah, let me just three more verses. Immediately after those tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky and the powers of heaven will be shaken. All kinds of strange celestial activities at the end of the tribulation period. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. People will see the Lord coming back at the end of the tribulation period. We'll look at that in Revelation 19 in just a little bit. All the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they'll see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory, and you'll be with him, riding on a horse. And he'll send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they'll gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. So the Lord tells them what to look for in terms of events. Now, the guys that are hearing this, they ain't going to hear it. The disciples will be dead in a little bit. But the generation living at this time will. The Jews will turn to this book during the tribulation period, and they'll see these signs and know what's going on. At least some will. Okay, what will be going on? Well, that's Revelation 6 through 19. We started looking at that last week. First thing we saw was war breaking out amongst all kinds of nations. And the inevitable consequences of war, famine, pestilence, and beasts. I guess if you disrupt the food chain badly enough, the animals ain't eating like they normally can. They'll start eating people too. People will be killed by predators and other animals. And these four riders that we saw in Revelation 6 represent these four forms of judgment: war, famine, pestilence, and beasts. And they will kill, verse 8 of Revelation 6, 1/4 of the world's population. That's about 2 billion people. So the wars and the inevitable consequences of war, and along with the odd changing in the attitude of beasts toward men, will kill 2 billion people in the first half of the tribulation period, first 3.5 years or so, roughly that much. Now remember, if you're talking about mass destruction, you're talking about nuclear weapons, germ warfare, all kinds of stuff. So everything doesn't have to happen immediately. A lot of that stuff, it may take a year or two to kill you. Radiation poisoning may just drain you away over a period of time. There's nobody to take care of you. There's no food, anything like that. So these wars and the fallout from them will kill 2 billion people, 1/4 of the world's population. It has to involve Asians because 60% of everybody on the planet lives east of the Ural Mountains in Russia. You can't get to 2 billion by killing off the Western Hemisphere. You can kill off the entire Western Hemisphere, North America and South America, Europe, and you still don't have 2 billion people. You would have to kill half of Africa. So you've got to involve Asians, where there's lots and lots of people, India, Pakistan, Indonesia, Southeast Asia, all that stuff down and through there where the population density is very, very high. They've got to be involved here in order to reach these numbers. Now, it doesn't mean the West won't be involved somewhat. Who knows? Maybe we'll go to war with Mexico. You know, maybe there'll be some deaths in the West. I don't know. But a lot of this will have to come out of the Eastern Hemisphere to get this many people. All right, that's the start of this time frame. During this time frame, Israel is living under a covenant with this Antichrist, who is the head of that federation of 10 nations formed for whatever reason. I'm guessing it's oil, but it could be something else. I may be wrong about that. And Israel will be living under his headship, thinking that he's their great protector, that he's the United States 2.0, until the midpoint when he turns on them. All right. First four judgments we saw in chapter 6, 1 through 8, pick up verse 9 of Revelation 6. When he broke the fifth seal, what's going on here is that seals on a book of judgment are being broken by the Lord. He's peeling his seals off, and these judgments are associated with the seals. So they're called the seal judgments. Well, he's up to the fifth one now. He broke the fifth seal. I saw underneath the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God and because of the testimony which they had maintained. These are Christian martyrs that are killed during the tribulation period. And the fifth seal shows John, them, standing at the throne of God in heaven. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Well, how long, O Lord, holy and true, wilt thou refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" They're asking God to take vengeance upon their death at the hands of this godless world. And there was given to each of them a white robe, and they were told that they should rest for a little while longer. By the way, if you are a departed spirit during the tribulation period, how do you wear a robe? You must have some kind of physical presence, some kind of an interim body. It's not the resurrected body. So you got to have something, it appears, in the meantime, between your death and when you get your resurrected body, because you can wear a robe. Right? Something has to be there. And they were told to just march in place for a little while, and God would take that vengeance. That was the fifth seal. The sixth seal involves a bunch of celestial disturbances. I looked when he spoke, when he broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth made of hair, and the whole moon became like blood. Now, when John uses the expression like or as it were or something like that, he's describing it the best he can. When he says the moon becomes blood, it becomes blood. When he says it's like blood, it can be anything that's red. Okay? So the expressions here mean something. They give us detail, or they give us a range of detail. What he's talking about here, the moon became like blood. It's red. And the stars of the sky fell to the earth as a fig tree casts its unripe figs when shaken by a great wind. So all these stars start crashing to the earth and things of that sort. And the sky was split apart like a scroll when it's rolled up, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. Not a good time to be on the Waikiki beach when every mountain is being moved out of its place. And the kings of the earth and the great men and the commanders and the rich and the strong and every slave and free man hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they said to the mountains and to the rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come. And who is able to stand?" People will recognize that this is God's wrath being poured out on the earth. They will beg for death, but they won't get it. Then there's an interlude, chapter 7, of sealing these particular individuals from physical death during this time. After this, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the winds of the earth so that no wind should blow on the earth or on the sea or any tree. Now, as you can see, God uses angelic messengers for these judgments. The first four riders we saw, I think that's what they are. Here's four more. They're holding back the winds. They got power over the normal currents of
air on the earth, and they're holding them back. They're calling time out. Don't do anything more to hurt the earth until we do something. And I saw another angel ascending from the rising of the sun, it's from the east, having the seal of the living God, and he cried out with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea. These guys have the power to damage the earth badly. And this fifth angel says, hold on, do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the bondservants of our God on their foreheads. So early on in the deal, this angel comes in, he calls time out. And he says, wait a minute, don't do anything more in judgment until we seal the bondservants of our God on their foreheads. How many, I wonder, seals do they have? I heard the number of those who were sealed. 144,000 sealed from every tribe of the sons of Israel. 144,000 Jews are going to be physically protected from death from these various judgments. 12,000 from each tribe. And these, it appears, are priests. These would be like 30-year-old men, unmarried men, priests beginning their priestly duty. And so from every tribe, they seal 12,000. Judah, Reuben, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, Simeon, Issachar, Levi, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. Male, virgin, Jewish priests, 30-year-olds, that's when they would begin their priesthood, are sealed from death and destruction from all of these judgments. They're going to make it through there alive. And the only way they can do that is if they're somehow or another divinely sealed from these judgments. So time out. Don't do anything until we get these guys protected, and they will be there at the end. They'll be there to go into the millennial kingdom. Verse 9 of Revelation 7. After these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude which no one could count, from every nation and all tribes and peoples and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes and palm branches were in their hands. Well, how did they know? How did John know they were from every nation? Unless he can see them and see the ethnicity represented here. And they got on robes as well. So this, it appears that we occupy some kind of an interim body between death and the second advent, when we get our resurrected bodies. And John sees that group collected there.
Then would that have been seen, if the Lord, the interim that he had, would it be would he have had a similar?
No.
Not then.
No, he got a resurrected body immediately.
Yeah. Okay.
He didn't go through this interim stage that it looks like some people will. And again, they're wearing robes. It's got to have some sort of physical structure to it to wear a robe. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, salvation to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. And all the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures, and they fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, saying, amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. And one of the elders answered, saying to me, these are clothed in white robes. Who are they? And where have they come from? And I said to him, my Lord, you know. And he said, well, these are the ones who came out of the great tribulation. They are martyrs that are killed in the tribulation, maybe the second half. I don't know if they're using the great tribulation title the way the Lord used it, but somehow out of the 7-year interval, they have been martyred, and they washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. These are believers who have been killed by their enemies in the tribulation period. For this reason, they are before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne shall spread his tabernacle over them. This is kind of like what Boaz did in Ruth, chapter 3, when he spread his garment over Ruth's lower half. That was actually a proposal of marriage, and he was proposing that he would take care of her and protect her and so on. God will do that for his own. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun beat on them, nor any heat. They won't have to go through any more Dallas summers. For the Lamb in the center of the throne shall be their shepherd, and they shall guide them to the springs of water of life, and shall wipe every tear from their eyes. These people in eternal bliss. These are the deceased believers that come out of the tribulation period, and they're seen gathered around God's throne while the tribulation period runs its course. All of this, all that I'm reading to you here, are events that will take place during the tribulation period. We know the start, we know the finish, we know the midpoint from Daniel, and now we're seeing a bunch of other stuff that's going on during that time. All right, the seventh seal. There's seven seals on that little book of judgment. From the seventh seal will come seven trumpets. And from the seventh trumpets will come seven bowl judgments. So there's like 21 judgments that sort of telescope out of each other. When he broke the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Now, as you know, this is the proof text for the fact that there are no women in heaven at this time, right? That's the only explanation I can come up with for how there would be silence in heaven. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. So the next series of judgments are all associated with the sounding of trumpets. The first seven had to do with the breaking of seals. Now we're going to get a trumpet sounding and get seven more judgments. And that won't be the end of it. And another angel came and stood at the altar holding golden censer, and much incense was given to him that he might add it to the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. The prayers of saints are going up to God to avenge them and to bring justice down on this earth. And so his actions proceed from prayers of his children. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints went up before God out of the angel's hands. And the angel took the censer, filled it with fire of the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there followed peals of thunder and sounds of flashes and lightning and an earthquake. And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. So the next series of judgments now is set up and ready to go. They come about in response to prayers from the saints on the earth. Continuing on with this lovely story, the first sounded, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. Every growing source on the earth is destroyed by this first trumpet. One third of that is. Now, is this regional or is it across the earth? It's a lot easier to imagine if it's regional. There are three regions on the earth where about a third of the earth's produce is grown. Up in the plains area in our country is one of them. The other one is over in southern Europe. And the third one is down in Africa, in the Rift Valley area of Africa. Any one of those three areas could be destroyed by this prophecy, and it would be fulfilled in that way. That's probably how it will happen, I would think, a regional destruction. I don't know how you could sprinkle this stuff on the whole earth and the sum total be a third. You could just blast one area. That's what I would think, but I don't know for sure. All right. The second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire. What is that? A great mountain burning with fire. What do you think John is seeing? Something like a great mountain burning with fire. What's that? Well, it's coming from heaven. It's coming down to hit. Asteroid? Comet? Some kind of a celestial body that he doesn't know anything about yet. He just said, hey, it looked to me like a mountain burning with fire, and it comes down and hits the sea. So some kind of a celestial body. You remember back in 1995, this comet
Shoemaker Levy. Remember seeing or hearing about that on TV? I'll remind you of it. Jupiter is a big trash collector for the universe. Its gravitational field is so strong that a lot of celestial things flying around out there in space get sucked down onto Jupiter because it's, as I say, its gravitational field is great. It's put in, it looks like God put it right where he wanted to be a garbage collector for the universe. Well, in 1995, a comet was discovered by this team of astrologers named Shoemaker and Levy, two different people. Shoemaker, I think, was husband and wife deal, and Levy was another person. And they always name these after the people that see them first. Well, this comet is whirling around out there, and Jupiter sucks it in, okay? That comet fragmented into multiple pieces, 10 of which were particularly large and in a bunch of small ones. Each one of those 10 fragments from that comet, when it struck Jupiter, and they could see it hit, the astronomers could see it hit, and of course Jupiter's turning, so when it hits, you get kind of like this row of impact craters from that comet. Each one of those impact craters was large enough to house and contain the planet Earth. Each one of 10 fragments crashed into Jupiter and created a crater big enough that you could put the Earth in it. You can go look this stuff up online, and they got pictures of it and all kinds of other stuff. So is it any great shake that something like a great mountain burning with fire hit the sea and a third of the sea became blood? Not like blood, it became blood. And a third of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. One celestial body hitting one of our big oceans destroys a third of everything in the ocean and the ships on the ocean and all the commercial activity on the ocean. One celestial body. Doesn't say where it hits, does it? North Atlantic? South Atlantic? North Pacific? South Pacific? Indian Ocean? We don't know. But it will wipe out a third of sea life. I told you we're going to have trouble believing what you hear. Third trumpet. And a third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. Similar scene than what he had before. This is another celestial body. Who knows what it is? And it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the waters because they were made bitter. You know where a third of the water is on the planet? The Great Lakes. Something could come in and fragment and split and crash into all of the Great Lakes water supply and poison it. And all the rivers that they feed, assume the Mississippi and some of the other rivers would all be affected as well. And a third of the springs of water were wiped out, were poisoned. You've got a third of the oceans impacted. You've got a third of the fresh water supply impacted. You've got a third of the growing regions of the earth where produce and food is grown, wiped out. I wonder how many people would die from a third of the earth's ability to sustain human life is taken away. Impossible to imagine. Then the fourth trumpet sounded, and a third of the sun and a third of the moon and a third of the stars were smitten, so that a third of them might be darkened and the day might not shine for a third of it, and the night in the same way. Whatever the solar cycle is normally, a third of it isn't going to function like we get now. And I looked, verse 13, I looked in, this is verse chapter 8, I looked and I heard an angel flying in mid-heaven saying with a loud voice,
woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth because of the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels that are about to sound. Here comes this advertisement in the middle of this series of judgments that says, hey guys, there's three more of these trumpets to sound, and they're worse than the first four. And so this angel puts another label on them. He calls them a woe. A woe is an additional symbol or title to a judgment that makes it even worse than it was before. And he says, sorry folks, but there's three more judgments coming that's even worse than what you just experienced. Chapter 9. The fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven which had fallen to the earth, and the key of the bottomless pit was given to him. Oh, this angel is actually given a key, access to a place called the bottomless pit. I always thought that was my wife's closet, but apparently it's something else. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke went up out of the pit, like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the pit. Wherever this place is, it's on the earth somewhere. And this angel is given the authority to open it, and when he does open it, just smoke, darkness comes out of the thing. And out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth. And power was given to them as the scorpions of the earth have power. Scorpions come out of this bottomless pit. Wherever it is full of locusts. And they were told, I lost my place, where was I? Oh yeah, verse 4. They were told that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, it's only a third, two-thirds of them were left, remember, but only the men who do not have the seal of God in their foreheads. What do locusts normally eat? The things they're told here, don't eat any of that. These are not normal locusts, guys. These have come out of the bottomless pit, and they're told, forget that green stuff that you normally go and destroy. Go torment people. But they weren't permitted to kill anyone, but to torment for 5 months. And the torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it stings a man. So these things are coming out of the bottomless pit, flying around on the earth, not paying any attention to green things. They're attacking people. They're stinging people and hurting people like a scorpion would do. I guess they have a stinger of some kind. And in those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will long to die, and death flees from them. They can't even kill themselves, it looks like. And look at the appearance of these locusts. It's like horses prepared for battle, and on their heads, as it were, crowns like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men, and they had hair like the hair of women, and their teeth were like the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates and breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots of many horses rushing to battle. And they have tails like scorpions and stings, and in their tails is their power to hurt men for 5 months. How'd you like to be swarmed by those puppies? And they have a king over them, the angel of the abyss. He is the leader and head dog in the abyss that they just came out of. His name in the Hebrew is Abaddon, and in the Greek his name is Apollyon. Both of those names mean destroyer. The first woe is past. Behold, two more wars are still coming after these things. So not only do you have these celestial events destroying much of the earth, now you have a supernatural, looks like some kind of demon-controlled critter, a locust, apparently they're about this big, with a tail that can sting people, And they don't eat green plants like they normally do. They attack people and sting them and torment them for a period of 5 months. I don't know what the life expectancy of a locust is, if they're dying off naturally here or if the earth is developing some kind of a attack back, some kind of a pesticide or something that kills these things. I don't know. But for 5 months, the earth will have to endure these stinging locusts that came out of the bottomless pit. That's the first woe.
Trying to get away from, you know, being killed, and when you think about this situation where people are just going to be constantly on the run, and I mean, when are they going to have time to do anything normally?
It's unimaginable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Life on the planet during this time will be nothing more than an attempt to survive, and that will be at great effort because of the destruction rate and death rate of these judgments. But here's my favorite one. Verse 13. The sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, one saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound in the great river Euphrates. Now, we've seen angels be the agents of destruction and judgment. So the four riders appear to be those, and we've seen these other guys. Well, there's four more that are bound in geographically in the area where the Euphrates River is. I take it these are evil angels, fallen angels, not the riders that we saw before. And the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and a day and a month and a year were released so they might kill a third of mankind. Four angels are going to kill a third of mankind that's left on the planet. The four riders kill a fourth. Now here's four more angels that will kill another third. That's 7/12, that's more than half. So just two judgments alone that will happen during this time frame we're talking about will kill more than half of the world's population. And the number of the armies of the horsemen was 200 million. These angels bring with them 200 million entities to kill a third of mankind. I heard the number of them, John says. Now, this is how I saw in the vision. The horses and those who sat on them, so these are riders of horses. The riders had breastplates the color of fire and of hyacinth and of brimstone, and the heads of the horses are like the heads of lions, and out of their mouth proceeds fire and smoke and brimstone. These guys are dragons. They look like horses, but they act like dragons. They can blow fire out their front end. And a third of mankind was killed by these three plagues, by the fire, the smoke, and the brimstone, which proceeded out of their mouths. You've never seen this critter. Now, most societies on this planet have some ancestral indication of the presence of dragons on the earth. Dragons apparently were real. Most societies have that around the world. These look like some kind of a dragon 2.0, a horse that looks like and acts like a dragon. For the power of the horses is in their mouths and in their tails. Now they can burn you from the front end, and their tails are like serpents and have heads, and with them they do harm, or they can sting you from the rear end. The rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the works of their hands so as not to worship demons and the idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and wood, which neither can talk nor hear nor walk. And they did not repent of their murders, of their sorceries, of their immorality, nor their thefts. So this plague involves 200 million dragon-like horses. They're
construction, as you can see, is a hybrid of different things, not normal. There are horses that can breathe fire and sting you with their tail, and there's 200 million of them. How is the world going to combat this kind of a killing barrage? You say, well, people are armed and they'll just shoot them. They'll take care of themselves. Probably not. Did you know that Israel's citizenry is pleading with their government to allow them to possess firearms? Because they can't possess firearms. Israel has the most restrictive private firearm possession laws on the planet.
And look what just happened to them. They can't protect themselves because their government has disarmed them, and so has most other governments. Australia collected all the firearms in Australia a while back. You got to really know somebody to have a gun in Australia. And much of the world is like that. So how is the world going to defend itself against this kind of a judgment? Against a horse-sized beast who can burn you to death if it gets close enough, or who can sting you with his tail if he can get close enough, and you got nothing to do but hit him with a baseball bat? The world is going to be in deep, deep kimchi when these guys start running around on the earth. Now, I don't know how they move. Horses, I guess they move on foot. But they got to get from wherever they came out of the Euphrates area. They got to spread on foot. I don't know how they could cross the oceans, but that ain't my problem. I don't care. But somebody's going to care. Oh, by the way, did I tell you it's hard to believe some of these things? Chapter 10. I tell you what. Let's hold off on chapter 10. The broad brush picture of this time interval we get from Daniel chapter 9. The detail of what happens in it we're getting right here in Revelation 6 through 19. And the detail is so awesome, so vast, and so destructive that it is impossible to actually imagine it correctly. You have nothing in your experience that would allow you to imagine some of these judgments we're talking about here. You haven't seen a horse that can blow fire out the front end and sting you with a snake-like tail, or some of the other things. Much of the earth is crippled. You can't get food. You can't get fresh water in some parts of the earth. You can see how the animals might start attacking people if so much of the normal hydrological cycle and all that other stuff is destroyed, how they might turn on people, start eating people. Some of those big predators in Africa, I mean the big cats and the things like that, probably just wipe out villages. Saw an article on TV on the line about this guy got attacked by a bear. Bear bit off his jaw. And there's several people have been killed recently by bear attacks in some of the national parks and things like that. I mean, the critters are already starting to turn on people, it looks like. And when it's really cranked up and in full force, there's no telling what's going on. I mean, you couldn't get out of your house and go down to Walmart and get you a sack of potatoes under these circumstances, could you? You probably couldn't get there. Something would get you on the way. But this is not all of it. The worst of them is still yet to come. They're the bowl judgments. Seven seal judgments, that is seven judgments associated with the breaking of seals. The seventh seal contains seven trumpet judgments, so seven more judgments, each of which associated with the sounding of a trumpet. And the last one of those contains seven bowl judgments, which finish the place off. It's like a staggering boxer, you know, who's getting whipped, and the bowl judgments come and they flatten him. They lay him out. He's done. The planet will be staggering. The death rate, as we suggested from our little Daniel chapter 12 deal, will be so high that it'd be hard to find somebody
somebody you know for sure, and anybody on the planet left at that time. What a picture, huh? You tell somebody what we just talked about here this morning, and they think you're nuts. They wouldn't believe a word you said. You tell them that there's some kind of a beast coming that's a horse-like dragon and is going to kill a third of the world's population. Let's say another couple billion people. And they'd say, what have you been drinking? They wouldn't believe any of this. Beg your pardon?
The worst to me are the locusts with the...
Yeah, those stinging locusts.
Scorpion tail and lion's teeth and women's hair.
Yeah, see, they're hybrids. They're a perversion of several things. They're not a regular locust, obviously. They don't eat anything green. They try to sting peoples, all they're here for. So clearly they are a divinely established and created perversion used in judgment of mankind. All of this stuff. God uses everything in judgment. Armies, celestial bodies, demons. I mean, everything around it will be used in the judgment of this planet. Any questions or comments about this? I know you can't imagine most of this stuff, but as you can see from the general nature of it, it is beyond horrible. The Lord said this thing is so bad it has never happened before and it'll never happen again. It's just a terrible, terrible, terrible time to be on this planet. Questions, comments? Let's go put on the feed bag. If you got one. Okay, we'll continue on. We're going through this pretty quick, I know. Just getting the sense of the detail is probably good enough in our study in Daniel. We don't have to study in great detail what's going on here in Revelation because it's so horrible anyway. So have a good week, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Thank you.
When are you going back, Katie?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Wow. Have a good trip.
I will.
Safe travel. You got Bob and Joe's email, don't you? So if you needed something, you could email. If you needed prayer support or something like that.
I think I had your blessed one. I'll get your number.
Sure, absolutely.
With the internet out there, we're closer to you than most times. So if you need something, be sure and fire us a deal. Let's try to leave it up. It looks like somebody just takes it down and throws it on the corner or whatever they want to do. I don't know why somebody has to take down this thing sitting here in the corner when, I mean, there's plenty of room without them doing that. Got it. Thank you. How the kiddos doing?
Good. Allie went to a wedding yesterday in San Antonio. They sent me a picture of them looking through the glasses at the
eclipse deal
at Central Market down in Houston, and then I sent them a picture of me doing it at the Central Market here.
The sky got pretty weird there yesterday, didn't it? It got kind of dark in the middle of the day. The sky looked real blue.
Yeah.
There was no light coming down.
Yeah.
I saw that going on, and I kept thinking, what the heck? And then I remembered that eclipse was going on. That explained everything. But at first, I wasn't sure what was causing that strangeness.
April 8th or something? It'll be real evident here.